Welcome to Headlines, Halakhic Debate of Current Events, a weekly interactive program on some of the most controversial breaking issues of today. Here now is your host, David Lichtenstein, founder and CEO of the Lightstone Group, and author of Headlines.
Welcome to Headlines. This week we have with us Rabbi Dr. Abraham Twersky. And since this week we read the story of Korach and Machlokes, and sadly, there's so much of it all over the world and in our community as well, we thought it would be fitting to have somebody who is such an expert on Midas. You're listening to us on WMCA 570. You could also listen to us on WMCA.com or at NachumSiegel.com. You can email us at any time at info@headlinesbook.com. We are speaking to Rabbi Avraham Yeshua Twersky, the famous Chassidish Rav and doctor, who's probably the most prolific author of Jewish topics in the world, to my knowledge. And I actually have been reading Rabbi Twersky since, it's probably 25 years. So he's a personal hero of mine, and it's really an honor to have you on. Welcome, Rabbi Twersky.
Thank you. Good morning.
Good morning. So, Rabbi Twersky, we've been having in our community so many talks about Aguna crisis. And when we spoke to Reb David Cohn here on the air, he said he believes that the problem with the Aguna crisis is that there is a fundamental lack of teaching of Derech Eretz and Midas in families and in yeshivas. And when there's no respect for others, the outcome are things like the Aguna crisis. So could you, as an elder statesman of our community, speak to us and all of us Abalei Mishpacha, how do we imbue Midas both in our children and, more importantly, in ourselves?
Well, first of all, let me reinforce what Rabbi David Cohen said. There's a statement, an amazing statement by Rabbi Chaim Vital, who was the disciple of the Arizal, where he says that a person should give greater emphasis and be more cautious about one's midos, right, than even about things that are mitzvahs and averis. Now, that's a major statement because people will be very cautious about what they eat. Is it the proper heksha, chol of Yisrael, pas Yisrael, the whole nine yards, right? But they may not be as careful about Lashon Hara, or they may not be as careful about anger, right? Now, the Talmud says that if a person goes into rage, that's equivalent to idolatry, right? And Rav Chaim Vital says, take that literally, right? A person who is a kasson, who loses control of his temper, is considered an idolater. Now, we might hear a person say about someone, oh, he is a very fine Talmud Chochem, and he's a tzaddik, but he's got a bad temper. To me, that's incongruous. That's like saying he's a fine Talmud Chochem and a great tzaddik, but he likes to eat ham sandwiches. That can't be. A person who is a tzaddik has to be in control of his anger. So, midas are tremendously important. Furthermore, if a person slips and commits a sin, that's terrible. However, that sin does not become part of his personality, and he can do tshuva for it. But if a person has a bad midah, a bad character trait, that becomes part of his personality, part of his character, and that is much more difficult to overcome and eliminate. So, yes, midas are all important.
And Rabbi Twersky, let me add on what Rabbi Chaim Vital said. The Gemara says in Shabbos that a ger came to Hillel and he said, teach me kol Torah kula regalachas. And he said, v'hafta l'reicha kamaicha, love your neighbor as you love thyself. He said, zu ikrei shel Torah v'hashar pirusha zilgmeir. The rest is just an exegesis, it's an explanation, zilgmeir. So could you imagine somebody coming into a daf yomi shiur and telling the Rav, I don't really want to learn the Gemara, I just want to learn the Tosfos. It would be absurd. Right. So Hillel is in effect saying that the Iker of Torah is Midas, is V'hafta L'reicha Kamaicha, and Lulav, Talmud Torah, Mikvah, Tzitzis, the whole rest of Torah is the Rashi and the Tosfos.
Right, right. Yeah, so we have to understand and appreciate that and take that seriously. One of the problems is that we've sort of constructed our own idea of Yiddishkeit, and it's a mistake. And we have to go by what Rabbi Chaim Vital says, and midas are primary.
So how do we teach ourselves midas, and how do we teach our children's midas? And lastly, how do we react when we meet people without midas?
First of all, yeah, let's start off by ourselves. Yeah, we have to. The only way we can teach ourselves midas is first of all by learning the Sforim, and primarily by learning how our gedolim behaved, how our great people behaved. In our own generation, we had Reb Shlomo Zalman Auerbach, who I was privileged to know. He was a great gadol, a great Talmud Chacham, but his greatness in midas even exceeded his greatness in Torah. Tremendous Balmidas. And we have stories about him, and it's a mitzvah to read about Reb Shlomo Zalman. It's a mitzvah to read about the Stipler. It's a mitzvah to read about the Chofetz Chaim and to see how these people conducted their lives. And we can find Gedolim in our own generation to whom we can look up to and adopt their midas. So I was privileged to know Reb Shlomo Zalman. I was privileged to know Rabbi Yamkov Kamenetsky. I was privileged to know the Stipler. That's where we learn midas from. And how are we going to teach it to our children? By behaving according to them, by behaving these midas. You're not going to get it by teaching them, by didactics, by lecturing. But when they see, I mean, I think if a person comes home and loses his temper, he's lost it. He's lost it with his children. Right? He's given them a bad lesson. So we have to be models of midas for our children.
So why don't the yeshivas, why don't we as a community stress it more? And when I give you, let me give you an example. We can go out and find every week a new chumrah of the week. There's the bugs in the water, the bugs in the lettuce, the shaitels coming from India. I mean, there's endless. When was the last time you heard of a chumrah in midas?
That you're so right. You're so right. But I'm not so sure that it's the emphasis should be on the yeshivas. I think the emphasis for midas and Yerushalayim has to be in the home. That's where we should learn it from, and children should absorb it in their mother's milk.
But you mentioned Reb Shlomo Zalman. When I studied in Eretz Yisrael, Reb Shlomo Zalman passed away. Reb Shlomo Zalman's wife passed away, excuse me, and he spoke at her levaya. And at the levaya, he said, at the funeral, he said, the custom is to ask your wife for forgiveness for anything you may have, any way you may have insulted her during your lifetime. He said, I testify, in all the years we were married, I never hurt her feelings, and I will not. I do not have to ask her for forgiveness. And I remember at the time, the whole Eretz Yisrael, people were walking around shaking their heads in amazement. How is it possible not to hurt your wife's feeling over the course of a 55-year marriage?
Right. I mean, it's an amazing statement from a tremendous gadol. And let me give a very simple example about Reb Shlomo Zalman. One time, some of the yeshiva bochurim escorted him home. And before he walked into his house, he stopped for a moment, straightened out his hat, brushed off his kapota, right, made himself more presentable, and he said to the Talmidim, the Gemara says, Ish v'isha shechina shchuya b'neihem. Right? Men and women live properly together, the shechina is there. I'm going to walk into my house nowhere with the shechina. I've got to make myself presentable. Right? If you have an attitude like that, then you have good midas.
Wow. So he walked into his house and he said, my house is truly a Mishkan, and how would you walk into the Mishkan?
Right.
And how would we, give us some, you know, I was speaking to somebody who runs a very large chesed organization in New York, and the person was bemoaning to me. He said, I help thousands of people a year, thousands. This is a very prominent person. He says, and he does it for free, and it's a full-time job for him. He says, Purim, I'll get 5 shalach manos in from the thousands of people I've helped. How would you respond to that as an elder of our community?
Well, glaring deficiency. You know, I've pointed out recently, speaking to a group, that just a few weeks ago we celebrated Shavuos. Now, you ask any child, what's the Shavuos? Why do we celebrate Shavuos? Well, that's when the Torah was given. And in Shemoneh Esrei we say, Zman Matan Torah Seinu. And Matan Torah was the single greatest event in Jewish history, right? Where does the Torah say Shavuos is Matan Torah?
It doesn't say any place in the
Torah. Anywhere. What does it say about Shavuos? Yom HaBikurim. Right. Not Yom Matan Torah, but Yom HaBikurim. What is Bikurim? Bikurim is HaKoros HaToiv. Bikurim is when we come to the Beis HaMikdash and we express our gratitude to Hashem for giving us this wonderful land and for the produce that we've been blessed with. Right? So, Bikurim preempt Matan Torah. And the Chiddush Yerim said something very interesting. He said, before Sukkot, we have Shabbos Shuva. Before Pesach, we have Shabbos HaGodol. What do we have before Shavuos? What should be the Shabbos of Shavuos before Shavuos? And he said, the Shabbos of Shavuos should be Shabbos Derech Eretz, because Derech Eretz called Mele Torah. Right? You can't get Torah if you don't have Midas. Right? And I think Rabbi Kotel Zechon Uvocha said, the Torah was given to mention and not to chayas. Right. And if you don't have proper midas, then we are what Eve said, right? That we come into the world like wild mules, and unless we change our midas, we remain intellectual animals, but not mentioned.
So has this changed in our generation, or has it always been this way, or is post World War II? Like, how did this? And both in Eretz Yisrael and in America, I think that this is something that maybe need tikkun. And where did this message get lost, that the Bein Adam L'Chaveirei has sort of become, you know, a stepchild to
right,
Limud HaTorah?
Right. It's unfortunate because all of the Sforim, all of the great Sforim, all stress the Bein Adam L'Chaveirei. And the memory that of a person is going to be ingrate. If he's going to be kofet toiv to another person and not have a kolosal toiv to another human being, then he's going to end up not having a kolosal toiv to Hashem. Right. And HaKolosal toiv is so great that it preempts Matan Torah. Now, how we show this is set by example. It's very interesting. The Hashem told Moshe about the Esau Makas. So the Mak of Dam, to turn the river into blood, Hashem said, tell Aaron to do it, but not you. Why? Because you have to have a koros atov to the river, right? You were, the river provided a haven for you when you were an infant, right? So you have to have a koros atov to the river. What do you mean a koros atov to the river? The river doesn't have any emotions. Practice a koros atov to an inanimate object. Practice HaTov to the water and to the sand, and then you learn how to practice HaTov to another person. Right? So HaKolos HaTov is primary. Very interesting. Hashem tells Moshe Rabbeinu, go deliver the Bnei Yisrael from Mitzrayim. Right? They've been enslaved, they're killing their children, throwing them into the river. Right? And Moshe says, I have to go ask permission from Yisrael, from my father-in-law, because he took me in when I was a refugee. What do you mean you have to go ask permission from Yisrael? Right? Hashem is telling you to go and save millions of people, and you're going to go take permission from Yisrael? Moshe knew what Hashem wanted. He knew that Hashem would not want him to do something which would be a lack of gratitude to Yisrael. Right? One of Moshe's sharpest reprimands, and I think this is an important psychological factor, was he called the Bnei Yisrael ingrates. He said, you are a bunch of ingrates, and you're the descendant of an ingrate. This is the Gemara Avodah Zarah Daf Hei. Right? Who was the first ingrate? Oh, the magician. Hashem gave him the most beautiful woman in the world to be his companion. And what does he do? He turns around and blames her for the Chatei Tzadas. Who is Yashon Asati Midah? You gave me this woman. Right? He was an ingrate. Where were the Bnei Yisrael in grace? Now, this is a very important psychological thing. When the Bnei Yisrael said, we can't tolerate hearing the voice of Hashem, it's too awesome for us, right? And Hashem said, was very pleased with that. And Hashem said these words, Mi yitein v'hoyo levavam sakala yomim. Who would give that they should always have this feeling of Yerushalayim that they have now? So Moshe Rabbeinu says to Bnei Yisrael, when Hashem said, Mi yitein, who would give? Why didn't you immediately say, Rabbeinu Shalom, ata titein, give us Yerushalayim? Right? And they didn't say that. So Tosha says, why were they ingrates? Because they did not want to say, Hashem, you give it to us, so that they should not feel obligated to Hashem. They didn't want to feel beholden to Hashem. I think that's the fault behind the lack of Hakaras HaTov. Right? People who do not want to feel beholden do not have Hakaras HaTov, but it even goes beyond that. Right? Where the feeling of not wanting to be beholden leads to resentment. The Sam Sofer says, I know why this person is an enemy of mine. And I know why this person is an enemy of mine. But this other one, I don't understand why he hates me. I never did him any favors. Right?
Very good, yeah.
And so the Chassidim was saying the same psychological thing that the Bnei Yisrael is saying. You develop resentments because you don't want to admit that the person did a favor for you and that you owe him a Hakaras HaTov. Right? And I think that's one of the major problems and something that we have to overcome.
So we have the honor. We're speaking to Rabbi Dr. Avram Yeshua Twersky, the Zkan of the Magidim in America, who's written more than 60 books on Musa and Yerushalayim. We're on the Nachum Siegel Network. We're on the Zev Brenner Network, WMCA 570. You can listen to us at 570.com. So Rabbi Twersky, when did this change? Has it always been this way? Is it post-World War II? I mean, some would say that post-World War II, there were no Bnei Torah left in the world. There were no Hasidim left in the world. I personally saw Rabbi Bromberg, the great historian, writes right after World War II. He writes, I'm writing a series of books about, you know, history of Rabbonim and Rebbes in Poland because I don't know if there will ever be Rabbanim or Rebbes in the world again, and I want to recount the visages of the great people who I saw in my lifetime. So is it possible it's a reaction to the Holocaust? We were so decimated, so they said, it's all Torah, it's all Hasidus, it's all Ben Adam L'Makayim, and somehow the Ben Adam L'Chaveri fell away?
Well, the example that I gave you, that Moshe Rabbeinu was accusing the Bnei Yisrael of a lack of Hakaras HaTov, it goes back 3,000 years. It was a problem even then. Right? And I think that one of the reasons that the Chachamim put such a tremendous emphasis on the Hakaras HaTov, so that the first thing that you see in the morning when you open your eyes is, Moda Ani Lefanecha. And all of the tefillahs that we have, and all of the brachos that we have, are all Hakaras HaTov to Hashem.
So how does one develop the mid of Hakaras HaTov?
Well, again, you know, I think that midas come in a group. I don't think you can isolate them. Again, I think that parents should make this very clear to their children. I think that when your wife puts down the bowl of soup before you, you should say thank you. Right? When you help the taking off the dishes off the table, if the children... Thank you. Right.
And we don't do, and truth is, when our wife gives us a bowl of soup, who turns around and says, thank you? We take it for granted.
Ah, that's the serious thing. That's the big mistake. We take things for granted. We take everything for granted. A little bit seichel will tell us that we should not have it for granted. Take a look. This morning I was in shul, right? There was a wonderful happening in shul. A boy put on tefillin for the first time. All right. And we sang Simen Tov and Mazel Tov, and they took pictures. Wait a minute. The Gemara says that every day the mitzvah should be new to you. Right? I put on tefillin, it should be like for the first time. Nobody took pictures of me. Nobody sang Simen Tov and Mazel Tov. Right? But we're taken for granted. This is just another thing. Right? And Hashem is very critical of mitzvahs on Lashon HaLevavot. Doing things out of rote, doing things out of habit, and not thinking about what you're doing. Right? So it's not only Hakol Sotayv, but all other medicine. We take things for granted. We don't think about what we're doing. But you see, midas come as a group, right? The example that I give is, woman comes in the living room and she says to her husband, you know, that chair is so shabby, we got to get rid of it and replace it. Okay, buy a brand new chair. Oh, my goodness, but now look at that sofa. That's just such a conflict, a contrast. We got to replace the sofa. Yeah, but now the carpet is not perfect. So what happens is you start off replacing the chair, and you end up renovating the whole living room, right? That's what happens with midas, right? If you have emunah and betochen, right, and emunah and betochen is so that you don't envy somebody else, right? You don't begrudge anyone else. Right? Yes, my neighbor has a brand new Lexus, and I've got this lousy old jalopy, right? Not to be envious of him, right? L'sachmet. If we have one good midah, then we'll have other good midahs. If we show, you know, the Chofetz Chaim spent his whole life about the midah of respect for another person and not saying lashon hara. Right? So I think that what we've got to do is we've got to start taking Yiddishkeit more seriously. Yes, shofar, tefillin, matzahs, they're all important. But look what Moshe Rabbeinu says. Mo Hashem Elokecha Roshoy Mimcha. What does Hashem want from you? L'yiros Hashem, to respect Hashem, right? L'leches v'drochov, to have his midas. L'avos Hashem, to love Hashem, right? And in that pasuk, he doesn't mention mitzvahs. In the next pasuk, he mentions mitzvahs, right? You can't begin doing Torah mitzvahs unless you have midas first. And I think somehow or other, we've got it all mixed up. So I think we have to renew ourselves and take a look as to what's really important and what does Hashem want from us, right? And emphasize midas. And I think that when mother puts the bowl of soup on for you, you say thank you. Thank you, honey, or thank you, mom. All right. I think that when the kids take the dishes off the table, right, that the parents thank you. All right. We have to teach by modeling, not by lecturing.
So we want to thank Rabbi Twersky, the Zkan HaRabbanim in America, for his warm Divrei Hesoiris and Divrei Musa. And I think one takeaway that I took away from this, he says, when we change one thing, it has a ripple effect. So if a person is makabel on themselves to say thank you with a lev shalom to their wives, to their children, it will spread to other areas of their personality. Thank you very much, Rabbi Tversky.
My pleasure.
We hope to have you on again. The young doyer has to hear from its skeinim how we have to behave.
Thank you.
Kolta. Thank you. I'd like to add on to what Rabbi Tversky said. And that is a very interesting story, somebody said. I'm not sure if it's an apocryphal story, but it is a beautiful story. And it really relates a little bit. The Torah says us that by Miriam, all of Kfal Yisrael, the whole Jewish nation, waited for her. Millions of people, while she was Mitzayra, they waited for her, and they did not leave the encampment without her, as Hakoras HaToyv, for the fact that she guarded, she cast Moshe into the water, and she watched him down the Nile in his little boat, in the little, you know, bassinet they turned into a boat until he was saved. And as Hakoras HaToyv for that, so many years later, maybe 100 years later, actually 120 years later, she was waited for by a few million people. Let me recount the following story. There was a fellow by the name of Professor Milston who said that his father died suddenly when he was 10 years old, and his mother had never worked before. So he said the cupboards in the house were totally empty. One day his mother said, you know what, I can't find a job, I'm going to do home cleaning, and I'm going to get paid every day, and this way I know I'm going to bring home a check that day. But she said to her young son, she said, Arthur, there's nothing to eat in the house today. I have one cube of sugar. So go to school, and when you get hungry, eat it. So he said, I went to school, I was 10 years old, and I had the sugar, and at 1 or 2 o'clock, my stomach was hurting. I thought I was going to die. So after lunch, I didn't have a lunch. I slipped out of the class, and I decided I was going to knock on somebody's door and see whether I would ask them for food. I would say, I'm hungry. So he said, I walked through the neighborhood near the school, and I came to a house. And the house had a lot of noise in it, people talking. And I said, you know, I'm embarrassed to walk into a whole crowd of people and say that I'm hungry like a beggar. But right next to there was another door. It was like a condo door, side by side, and it said, Maurice Jackson. He said it was an innocuous-looking house. I had courage. I knocked on the door. He said, and a 10-year-old girl my age came to the door, and she gave me a big, beautiful smile, and she said, hello, my name is Rosalind. Can I help you? He said, and I got totally embarrassed. I was going to ask a girl my age for food. So instead, I looked at her, and I said, you know, it's hot, and I'm thirsty. So she looked at me. She said, wait a minute. And she came back, and she had a big glass of milk and a plate of cookies. There were four double-decker cookies. She said, I like to drink milk. And when I drink milk, I also like to eat cookies. He said, I drank the whole glass of milk, and I polished off all four cookies. And I thanked her very much, and I left. Now, he became a very famous professor of surgery. And as part of his job, he would, in a hospital, he oversaw the surgery. He would look at all the entries. So it's 50 years later, and he's looking through the new, ill people who have come into the hospital and need surgery, and he sees a name, Rosalind Jackson. And he says, could that be the same girl, Rosalind? So he decided, he called the nurse on the floor, and he said, usually an intern or another doctor comes. He says, in this case, I would like to meet the woman myself. And he comes into a room, and there's a supine woman laying down. They're obviously very ill. And he looks at her, and he says, Rosalind Jackson? She looks at him, and she gives him a smile. And he says, the smile was 50 years later, was the same smile. And he said, where do you come from? And she mentioned the neighborhood. It was the same neighborhood. He said, what was your father's name? She says, oh, my father was Maurice. He said, I took care of the woman. I made sure I was attended by the surgery. I picked the best surgeon. The nurses, I stayed. And she had a complete recovery. And we sent her home. And the bill for the hospital was $63,000. On the bottom of the bill, the doctor wrote, paid 50 years ago with a glass of milk and four double-decker cookies. That's called Hakaras HaTov. We should all aspire to meet this like that. We're going to be continuing our interview with Rabbi Shalom Fishbein, who's the head of Kashrus for the Chicago Rabbinical Council, the largest regional Orthodox council in the world. And he is one of the most respected names in Kashrus in the world. And the topic is kosher Starbucks. So last week he gave us an introduction to it, and this week we'll be continuing and actually going through the minutiae of all the different items they have in the Starbucks, the nets and the frappuccinos and the cappuccinos, etc. So welcome, Rabbi Fishbein. So Rabbi Fishbein, let's go back to the case of coffee. We started with coffee. You said there's the basket, there's the coffee basket, and you started explaining some of the problems with having a coffee at Starbucks. So walk us through it again.
Okay. Basically, the way you make coffee is you put the coffee grinds into the brew basket, hot water drips through it, and on the bottom of that is a filter, and you get your coffee. The problem with plain coffee is that this brew basket is put into, one of two ways of cleaning, similar ways, but let's go to the more simply to understand way, into a dishwasher that has in it, the tongs or the plates that just used for hot Isurei Daraisa, and now you get a hot water of about 180 degrees, Urim L'Kirishin at least, which is Mavliya Kadei Klipa. You know, there's an argument to be said maybe it's a little bit more than that because the whole chamber becomes hot. Maybe it's a little more, but the higher it's not long enough. in there to more than kadei klipa, where the bleus of hot water transferred tom from one point to the other, and now your brew basket has in it bleus of ham, mamish. That therefore, when you put it back into your brew basket to cook water, cook coffee, so the hot water that's dripping onto it is also mavliya kadei klipa, and it can come out into your coffee. That's the simple way of looking at it, and therefore there are those that want to be macher and say, I'm not interested in such a thing. An argument could be made, maybe a brew basket could be considered cliché-y, possibly, because you don't have tfanos mechamamais, or maybe that there's somewhat of the coffee grind acts as a buffer. You know, there's makaris and halachas both way, but the simple understanding of it is that there is bleus transferring and bleus coming out when you're making your coffee. And again, I want to be clear. Can we talk in learning and say b'diavad it's mutter? Yes. Is this the chatchila, the way of drinking coffee? In other words, is there an alternative in Starbucks that one can get that doesn't have these shilas? There are. It's called an Americano. An Americano is a coffee. It's just made slightly different, that you use an espresso concentrate, add the hot water to get it to the full strength of regular coffee. It doesn't use the brew basket. It uses something called the espresso bar, which is a built-in place machine that almost nothing besides maybe the shot divider goes through any type of cleaning device together with trafe. And you have mamish in the same place with almost an identical cup of coffee, where one had shilas and one didn't have shilas.
Now, if people who do want the drip process, when you say you want it, I would like to hear your opinion, but I could think of four or five different buses to, you know, be smach. And you have it's washed in with detergent, which is a nice and tam. The amount of water in the dishwasher is probably 1,000 times the amount of the grease. The ham itself is a nice and tam lufgam in coffee. I don't think anybody wants the tam of...
I'm not sure that's there's actually a ham coffee flavor made.
Yeah, but I think most people don't want... I mean, there's probably a chipotle flavored coffee too, but I would think most people would agree that they don't want to hear... I don't know about you, but I like my coffee. Maybe Taka, a person who wants it, but would you agree that for most people, a ham flavored coffee would be a nice and tam lufgam? So when you add all these together, so you have the bleus is most rishonim is a drabanan, right? Then you have nice and tam lufgam is a drabanan, then or could be mutter. Then you have bittel. You have a double nice and tam lufgam. I mean, it would be a real to me. It sounds like a you have many different ways to be. You know, there's four. I just mentioned four different ways to be makel here.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'll try to go through some of those. The soap is for the sanitizer. It's called the Hobart. It doesn't use soap; it just uses sanitizer, which I heard from Rebelski. It's not considered a pygmy. There is one part earlier in the three compartment sink which they do use soap, which they only use soap in the first of the three compartments. The second one is just plain hot water without soap. And, you know, if you were trying to perhaps argue that the soap in the first compartment went into the metal and therefore made everything pogum, so that the accepted way in the kashrus world is to follow Chazon Ish, that unless it is at a temperature of kedei resicha, that we know that it pushes in no matter what, you know, the bleus transfer back and forth, then you would have a nice tam of kam, which you do not have in the case of Starbucks. Nice tam, kedei resicha, as we know, is at 212, and hascholas resicha is at 190. So sometimes, but I'm sure your readers have seen, let's say, you know, a little bit off topic, but if you pick up a package of cheese and it says, Hagola at 212. What is that all about? because some companies cannot get the resicha, hagolo temperature all the way up to 212. So some of the kashrus agencies allow them to get a solos resicha at 190, and that's how they work when they kosher between treif and kosher cheese. Well, not everybody's happy with that, and therefore the frat and the chabad community, and therefore they want people to know that this cheese is taka, hagola temperature the way it's supposed to be, not haskola at 190. Having said that, in the case of Starbucks, both the three-compartment sink and the Hobart, which again is the dishwasher, do not even reach 190. It reaches only 180, and in the Hobart at least, and therefore you have the problem of chazanish that you cannot say that the soap went into the blia, went into the metal. So the blia of pegima of soap did not enter, according to chazanish, which is the. And in addition to that, you also even like a moldika, you know, the chazanish is relatively, I'll call it new, in the last 50 years. Besides the fact that he lived in the last century. But, a mold of Karabonim used to be Saimech on Kabbalah Kach Polte, if you ask the old Rabbonim. But even
Rabbaron was Saimech on that.
Right. It was a mold of Karabonim.
I think in Lakewood, there's Saimech on Rabbaron, but Kabbalah Kach Polte, and it got me Pesach and many other, yeah.
Well, certainly in the kashrus agencies, they do not today. By the way, they do follow Rabbaron on another aspect, and that is what's considered Yatzah letters, which is 120. So that much, and in our case, which I'll get to in a minute, about what you can order at Starbucks, which is a little bit of a breakthrough, does follow a barn on this. But I just want to make a point that you don't have Kabbalah Kach Polte here because the ovens are at 450 or 500 degrees. The washing is, 130.
I understand that, but but the question is the grease goes into the water first, and then it goes into the metal. So the pagam happens, let's say if somebody cut a knife, a ham with a knife, right? So the grease would go off the knife, go into the water, then go onto your basket. So the pagam doesn't happen in the walls of the basket. The pagam already happens in the water.
Right.
The grease is spoiled in the water. So at that point, whatever is nivla is already nifgam. So even like the chazanish would be mutter.
No, but there's no soap. There's no soap.
Put a detergent? There's no detergent.
No, that's what I'm telling you. There are four steps. Only one of those steps have pegima, but the other hot steps don't have.
There's nothing at all. It's just plain water.
Right, plain water or a sanitizer, which we don't consider a pegima.
In other words, the sanitizer has no flavor to it.
Right.
Interesting. So all you would have with bittel, and you're saying the nice and tam lufgam would be tully, and whether you do rabaron shita or whether you hold like the chazanish.
I'd be careful saying rabaron shita on that because you don't have rabaron shita here because the heat from the oven is much greater than the you don't have kabbalah kach polte.
No, but you do because the basket never goes into the oven, so the water that's going into the basket at 180 would come out at 180 too, right?
Right. Oh, from that angle. I have to figure out the numbers on that. It could be. Would the barn say that today that it's enough to kosher? Kabbalah Kach Polte was on the koshering. Okay, it could be. We could definitely.
So we still have nice and tam. We have rabaron and we have the nice and tam in the fact that you may not want the ham in your coffee in the first place.
You may be right about the ham. Although I have seen ham flavor coffee. They make these constant ham flavors,
but it's more than just the ham.
There's a lot more.
But I'm saying in a dirty dishwasher, you're gonna have ham and you're gonna have cheese and you're gonna have I don't know what they serve chullant. And it's some disgusting concoction of nobody in their right mind is gonna sit and drink a glassful of whatever sewage they have in that sink over there. So even if the ham in itself may not be a nice and tam, certainly the collection of debris they have there would be a nice and tam, no?
But hey, look, now you're in a certain, if you that argument would be doing away with the whole Ramah. Why doesn't the Ramah just say that anytime you wash dishes together, it's
I understand.
It's
yeah. So you're saying that it's you have to be soimer. So again, so why? How would you be matarit then somebody to drink from this from the drip coffee?
Well, you know, the brew baskets. You, as I said, you can make an argument possibly that it's a cliché-y, which you know there's a lot to work with over there. It's possible, as I said, it's a cliché-y. It's only maybe the filter acts as a buffer and takes care of the klipa. So, you know, perhaps the brew basket is a little better than some of the other stuff.
We're speaking to Rabbi Simcha, Rabbi Shalom Fishbein, the head of the Chicago Rabbinical Council Kashrus Committee. He's formerly of the OU and one of the most respected people in the world in Kashrus. And we're speaking about is Starbucks kosher. Rabbi Fishbein, another question. The whipped cream at Starbucks, the Frappuccinos at Starbucks. Let's go into some of the more tertiary items at Starbucks. What do you say about those?
Well, the Frappuccino is simply not certified as kosher because it comes from it's made from a base that's made, I believe, overseas, which without a hechsher. So you simply can't, it doesn't start off as kosher. You know, many of these other items that we're talking about start, the ingredients are kosher. They just may get compromised in a Starbucks store. Masha'en King, as I said, the Frappuccino, it starts off as non-certified kosher, coming from who knows where, perhaps China or whatnot.
So can I interrupt you on that? I'm not knowledgeable about this, but Ramosha has a klal too when he speaks about Chalav Yisrael, Chalav Stam. He says there's a concept of mirsis that if an organization is worried that they're going to lose their license because of the fact that they are violating law, he says that Be'etzem has a din of like there's a mashgiach there. If an organization prints ingredients, and I think according to the FDA, and I'm not an expert, this is what I've been told, if it's more than 1%, they would have to disclose it on the ingredients. Why wouldn't that have a din of mirsis if they look at the ingredients and you say there's nothing in it that's not kosher, according to Ramosha?
Yeah, okay, but I'm not sure I understand your question. Meaning like this: let's say it says in there whey powder, or something along those lines. So you don't know what's in the sweetening base. So if the whey powder could either be from a kosher whey or a trefer whey.
Yeah, but let's say, for example, before I did this interview, I spent a little while on their site. So let's say there's a site. It's called Vegetarian Starbucks, and they were mavasa the whole world of Simcha Tzuma, that now there's a whole bunch of their Frappuccinos that are vegetarian. This is not a Jewish site at all. Now I could imagine that Starbucks violated this. It would cause the only thing worse than violating the gay sense of right is probably violating a vegetarian sense of right. So would that be something that you would say you could be simach on if you're going to a Starbucks and they say that?
Absolutely not. Not that they'd be lying, but just that we worry about blias. The hardest thing to do from a kosher standpoint is to take a wet liquid item and make it dry. Frappuccino bases are dried products, they're powders. So now, if you're overseas, the way they do it is they spray dry the product. A spray dryer, again, is you take liquid, you spray dry it, and it becomes a powder, and then you reconstitute it later. And that's where most of the items in a Frappuccino base are powders from spray dryers. And a spray dryer is an extremely complicated, multi-million dollar machine that you buy and you find ways to regain your capital by renting it out to anybody. And those are called toll dryers or whatnot. And they spray dry meat and cheese and who knows what, tomato products, as well as the products that can be going in. These can be, and just agav, a spray dryer is very curved to a kli rishon. And therefore, if you don't know what you're doing, if a kosher agency doesn't know what it's doing, there's no way they're really koshering it, because the only way to kosher is through Agoa, and you can't do Liban on these things. And so you're relying on you need to know what you're doing in order to kosher a spray dryer. That's agav. So therefore, the point is that your powders that go into the frappuccino may just say, you know, something simple like, you know, I don't know, powdered whey, powdered milk, powdered eggs. Those things, to make it on a kosher spray dryer, especially overseas, are difficult, and many times they're not going to be kosher, and therefore the ingredients might just say something simple, but they are far from simple as far as kosher goes.
Now, so I had a Rav who I asked this to, and he said by a spray dryer, he said the only problem is going to be the first run. He says, because even if it was belay, let's say your worst case scenario, a guy had a spray dryer that was being used for meat, for soup, and now it's being used for another run. He said a factory run usually runs for a few days, a week. He said, so the first 24-hour run, you could say there's still some bleas. He said, like a week later of the run, could there be bleas because there was something in there a week ago? So how would you respond to this opinion?
Yeah, there's something called shefa in halacha, where b'diavad you can make that case.
So I'm just saying, I before this, I spoke to a rav in Philadelphia, an expert on kashrus, and I asked him, how would be the tzad? And he said that halacha. He said it would be shefa, it would be a svek sveka by shefa on a drabanan. And I'm curious, what would you? That would be how he would.
Why is it a drabanan? I'm not sure why.
Well, he said because the bleis, so, you know what I mean. It would be nice. It would be nice in tamlefkam, but pashtus. You don't want the meat soup in your way, right? So it would be a nice and tamlefkam. It would be that's why it would be a drabanan. So it's a safik drabanan, but makam shi'iyacha levure. So he said that's how he would be mata the frappuccinos.
Well, again, there's flavors in the frappuccinos. That's as far as maybe what stuff goes on a spray dryer. Maybe you can say shefa. But there's also flavors. Flavors are extremely complicated things that are not bottled, because it's a and who knows what's in a flavor. There could be 40, 50 little components that are give a ton, that could be treif mamish, that go into your flavor, and you don't have bittel or anything like that.
Okay.
The frappuccinos are really awful.
A really problem. What about the whipped cream?
The whipped cream is really... I have found that the whipped creams are generally okay, but you kind of need to know your places. But in other words, certainly like the half and half and the milk, so they're kind of regional. But what I've found is that the whipped cream was okay. I don't want to forget to say this, because one of the most commonly asked questions are the lattes. You know, just getting a latte, which is made up of steamed milk, or if you mock banachol yisrael, you can get steamed soy milk together with espresso. What I wanted to tell everyone is that I found a way that one can get luchatchila a latte, even in a regular Starbucks, and that would be to order something called a kitty latte. A kitty latte is, they make these lattes not hot enough so that the kids don't burn themselves. And it's really supposed to be set about 120, but they can manually set the temperature so that you, at whatever you want. So you can say, I want a latte at 115 degrees only. They can set it for you, and they can make it for you. And it's I mentioned before, following Reb Aaron's understanding of what yatzah lettuce is, and therefore there's no shilas. I think it's nice breakthrough.
but you're saying that what would be the latte is made with the wands. The wands, there's no shilas at all. So what would be the shilas because the wands don't go into the dishwasher, do they?
No, they don't.
So what would be the shilas?
the metal cups. The metal cups.
Oh, go into the dishwasher. She's saying you can make those. I understand.
Right. That's Mamash Klirishon, the way, you know, they make it. So the metal cups are fine, but if you do it under Yad Soled, it's 150. And by the way, I've tried it in the last few weeks, you know, making sure that it tasted hot enough for someone that wanted this type of drink, and, you know, I thought it was fine.
So we're coming out with, you're saying that even somebody who's machmir and all dinim could have a soy latte that's made less than Yad Soled by, and it'll be lechatchila lechaladeis.
Yes, I'm very excited about this new drink.
And in fact, even if you hold it Bishul Akam, there wouldn't be Shaila Bishul because it's not Yad Soled by. We're speaking to Rabbi Shalom Fishbein. He's the Kashrus, the head of Kashrus for the Chicago Rabbinical Council, which is the largest regional Orthodox organization in the world. And we're speaking about is Starbucks kosher. Let me ask you one last issue. Many of the kiosks are owned by individuals. Mm-hmm. Now, let's say you have a kiosk and it's owned by a Yid, right? Mm-hmm. Now, the question is, he's probably not Toivel his Kalim. Now, I don't know, let's say you could get, arguably, I don't know, if you could get a coffee or something in a real container. I don't know if such a Matzias exists in Starbucks where they have glasses. I just don't know. Would you be able to drink in this kiosk knowing that this Yid was not Toivel his glasses?
I don't think that it offers the food for you. Just that you know, even if it's owned by a Yid, most of the times there's at least a shutfus, a partnership with someone that's not Jewish, and therefore, as far as Sudas Kalem, it certainly helps in that matter. But if it's if you ordered it, you're saying that you for sure know that it's
so you know it's owned. This kiosk is owned by Mr. Friedman,
mm-hmm.
who is not a Shomer Torah Mitzvah.
This is a very theoretical. I can't imagine I don't know of any case where there is such a case. But theoretically, I don't know if that would oser the food that you just ordered. You know, it's a mitzvah on him to do, and maybe he may not be able to drink it. But you that ordered it, I don't believe that osers the food for you.
Uh-huh. Well, Rabbi Fishbein, this was really wonderful, and very nageya. But the takeaway is you're saying is that the Americano is certainly much easier. The if you want to go with the brood basket, you have who to be Simichon. The Frappuccinos, however, I don't want to put any words in your mouth. Can you be makel by a brew basket? I don't want to pass for jump words. Could you be makel by a fruit basket? I ask you that. Then let me go backwards.
Well, there's you can make an argument to say it. I wouldn't recommend it though. I would recommend that you get something without a Shiloh. That's the Americano. You can even now get a latte under Yad Soled. Why get something with a Shiloh if you can get it without a Shiloh?
And the Frappuccinos, you say certainly you cannot be mati because you just don't know what's in it. It's a
right.
Closed bag.
And do not confuse that with the Frappuccino bottled drink that they sell at Starbucks. That's made locally, meaning in America. It's made under Hashkacha using a completely different, it has a K on it, but it's Rabbi Charlap. It's a reliable Hashkacha. And it is not the same Frappuccino base used in the Frappuccino behind-the-counter stuff.
Which comes from overseas.
Yes.
This was most educational. Thank you very, very much. And as somebody who's used your Hashem for many years, I want to thank you, not only on behalf of the listeners, but on behalf of my family as well. Thank you very much,
okay.
Rabbi Fishbein.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Bye-bye.
So this was really a very appropriate topic, given the fact that the last few weeks we've read the story of the Meraglim, the spies, And the reason is that, you know, the Chiddush Arim, the first Ger Rebbe, takes the position, as does the Baal HaTanya in Likutei Torah, as does the Maral for the Litvak among us, the Maral in Satan. They say, what was the chet of the Meraglim? What mistake did they make? And all three come to the same idea, the same conclusion. And they say that in the Midbar, in the desert, they lived in a sort of ephemeral existence. They lived in a ruchniistic existence. They didn't never had to get their hands dirty. It was like living in your father's house, you know, like that 30-year-old Bacher, you just can't push him out the door. Life is too good. He says they had the mun, they ate the slav, they had the anani hakovo, they had the brook, the bear Miriam. He says, why get your hands dirty? I mean, you know, aina, ribis, you know, gzela, all the commandments of the Torah in real life, they're very formidable and daunting. But in school, they're just theory, and it's much easier. And they said, it's Eretz Eicheles Yeshveha, going into Eretz Yisrael, Vasafta de Ganecha, Visiroishcha Vietzarecha, working is hard. You have real Nisyonis. And they said, we just don't want Nisyonis, say the Maral, the Chiddush Arim, let's do chronological order, the Baal HaTanya and the Chiddush Arim. They said, it's Eretz Eicheles Yeshveha, we don't want it. But they respond, but Kaviyachel said, no, we were brought to live here. That's what the Moshe told the Malachim. Yeah, do you have among you Lysina, Flesigzel? You don't. So the Shlemus of Adam is when he actualizes the Torah, and that's the Chet of the Meraglim. They didn't want to actualize it. So what is this concept, kosher Starbucks? It's for all of us working very hard to earn a living and having to fly through airports and go to all kinds of strange locations to feed our families and to support our maestas and to roll forward the wheel of Yiddishkeit. We have to deal with these realities. So I want to thank Rabbi Fishbein. Next week we'll be having Rabbi Yair Hoffman, and he will be discussing priorities in tzedakah. And, you know, that's obviously something we deal with every day, keeping our schools afloat, etc. So I want to thank our guests, the esteemed Rabbi Twersky, Rabbi Fishbein, and I look forward to speaking to you again next week. You can always send me questions at info@headlinesbook.com, suggest any topics you would like to hear, as well as any particular rabbanim you would like to have on the radio. Thank you. Kol tov.
Thank you for listening to Headlines, Halakhic Debates of Current Events with David Lichtenstein, founder and CEO of the Lightstone Group and author of Headlines. Please join us again next week for another edition of Headlines.